a lot of material that I have been using and things that have been really important to me come from this book called Clarity in Prayer by David Jacobson. He's a Presbyterian minister out of California. And the book is not available very much commercially. I got it through a local Presbyterian church in Portland and bought out their supply and have given it away and have used it in some other workshops. But he comes on with just a little different approach to things that I find has been really helpful to me. I wanted to mention this book, which is also in the bookstore downstairs, Adventures in Solitude by Lois Erickson. Really is talking about meditation and quiet time. And Lois and her husband have been up here many times on faculty. They're from Eugene, Oregon, and this is her first publication. It costs, I think, 95 cents. But she's talking about King's X time. When she was a kid and her shoestrings got untied, you know, and he'd call King's X, and the game could go on all around her. But she'd stop and tie her shoelace until she was ready and to be in again. And so she's talking about taking time for King's X. And I thought it was a neat little book. So I do know Lois Erickson. And it's available down in the bookstore. So I didn't bring the Bible. Well, I've got some.
Let me just run into the kitchen.
Let's see if there's one in there. I've got, you know, I can tell the stories and lots of the two references I want to use.
Here's the good news.
Okay, that's fine. Thank you. We're talking about forgiveness, and for a lot of us who live in a world of rules and laws and so forth, when somebody violates our sense of law or rule or standard and so forth, and we've been hurt in a number of things. We have a sense that we ought to know how to forgive, and certainly Christ tells us that we, you know, no real number. He just says, you know, 70 times 7, which means, hey, how many times can you forgive? I mean, that's something that we should continue to do. But it's hard. It's not always, it's not an easy thing to do. And that, the capacity to forgive is a gift of God. We talked on Monday a little bit about what forgiveness, or what, you know, holding a grudge, refusing to forgive, does to the person who is not forgiving. That it, that in a sense, when we are told that we should forgive one another, it's for our own benefit. That when we forgive, we allow God's love to work with us, within us, cleanse us. When we don't forgive, we're the ones that chew up the insides. My husband at this time is teaching a class on stress, and he's dealing with much the same thing. How do we keep stressing ourselves inside? The person that, just take a minute, think of some old grudge that maybe, hopefully you don't hold anymore, but that you can remember when you did. And how much energy you spent in being angry, unforgiving. You'd show them you weren't gonna forget that. They may have gone on. They didn't even, many times they didn't even know that they had hurt you in any way. Or if they did, they thought it was long since forgotten. But they have forgotten it. But you have continued to churn inside with it, and it's unfinished business for you. And when it's unfinished business, it continues to churn. There's a sense in which the human being wants to bring conclusions to things. If you have an agreement, if you decide, say, I'm going to be at such and such a place at 4 o'clock, and you're not there, you know, you're late, even though you may have started late, there was no way you were going to get there late, get there on time, there's a little nagging until you get there, and then you give all kinds of excuses and so forth, but there's, you haven't completed your agreement. You haven't lived up to your agreement, and so there's a certain sense of nagging on the inside. When we have a grudge against somebody else, when we feel we have been wronged, we have been hurt, and we do not find the capacity within ourselves at that time to forgive it, it's something that keeps hanging on, and we give energy to it, and we give, and it turns up in our insides. And when it comes to the surface again, we spend some more energy in dealing with it. In the story of the prodigal son, I'm not going to read, I'll just talk about it. The younger son asks for his inheritance, and he goes off to the big city, and he wastes it, and he spends it, and it's all gone, and then he doesn't know what to do, so he goes and eventually takes care of pigs for somebody until he realizes that even the lowest servant on his father's farm eats better and is better treated than he is being treated at that time, so he decides that he'll go back to his father and ask for forgiveness and then work for his father at the lowest level. That's his idea, that he will go back and be one of the poor servants on father's farm, but he will be in better shape than he is working for this pig farmer. The father, of course, when he sees the son coming, or when the servant tells him that his son is coming back, the father loves him, cares for him. And then, of course, the images of God, who loves us and cares for us and keeps giving, keeps forgiving, keeps loving. And the boy can't quite accept this. But finally it gets through to him. Hey, they're, you know, we're going to kill the fatted calf and have this big party and celebrate the son's return. He has done something that in his own eyes was wrong. He has made restitution. He has confessed, made restitution, and he has been forgiven. And he finally accepts that forgiveness, and they have a party. Then there is the older brother, who has always been a good guy, always stayed home, always obeyed his father's commands, and he says, but I always did what you told me to. And the father said, I know, but this is the lamb has been found, and we're going to celebrate. And the older brother chooses at that time to continue to be angry about that and be unforgiving and keeps that churning. You know what? He doesn't get to go to the party. He doesn't. And in that same way, when we choose not to forgive, even if we're totally justified, we don't get to go to the party. We don't get to celebrate. We use an awful lot of that energy to keep us away from the joy that's possible. It becomes a barrier to our enjoyment and our living. In the Lord's Prayer, it says we ask God to forgive us our wrongs as we forgive those who have wronged us. And then it goes on later on in Matthew, the next two verses. Let's see if we go to Matthew 6. Forgive us the wrongs that we have done as we forgive the wrongs that others have done us. And then it's, if you forgive others the wrongs they have done you, your Father in heaven will also forgive you. But if you do not forgive the wrongs of others, then your Father in heaven will not forgive the wrongs you have done. This morning, Vern Rieke was talking in his class about covenants and promises and so forth. And it almost sounds as though this is kind of a threat. You know, if you don't forgive other people, then your Father in heaven is not going to forgive you. And it's, I guess, after listening to Vern this morning, and I have done some reading through in my own mind in terms of not hearing some of these things with a big finger shaking at me, but as a given. Yesterday I talked about, you know, if I let go of my glasses, they drop. That's not, they ought to drop. It's not terrible punishment. It's just an is. It's one of the laws. One of the natural laws, not a punishment law. It's not that God's going to punish you. It's just that if you don't forgive others, God's forgiveness for you is not available to you. If you, I'm aware of this too. If I say, I don't care, you know, he shouldn't have done that, and I'm not going to forgive him for that. Maybe I should, but I'm not going to. I can't forgive him. What I'm doing, in a sense, is saying, hey, you know, God already forgives him. I know that. I mean, because I believe that's what the Bible says, God will forgive him. And I'm saying, hey, God, I know better than you are. I'm closer to the situation, and I'm not going to forgive him. It's putting myself between him and God. And in the process of doing that, kind of being a barrier between him and God, saying, well, I'm just not going to let you think you got off scot-free. I'm not going to let God's love and care and forgiveness come to you. I have to make a shield, kind of like an umbrella. God's love is like sunshine. It comes on all of us, the just and the unjust. And I'm just not going to let it get to this other person. And in the process, by making myself tough, shielding, I don't let it come to me. I don't let God's love come into my life and move on through. And it does get to the other fellow anyway. So I am bracing myself and blocking out the love coming to me, but this fellow's going to get it anyway, no matter what I do. And it isn't justice. And I guess we have to realize that if we are Christians, we aren't living in a justice world. That's the Old Testament, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. We are living in a world, we are living in God's grace. We are forgiven because of God's grace, and so is that other person that has hurt us. So when we hear that, forgive us the wrongs that we have done, if we forgive the wrongs that they have done to us, so then we will be forgiven. It's that as we soften ourselves, maybe instead of making ourselves so hard and a hard shield, a kind of the umbrella, that we allow the forgiveness to come to us too. It's not a threat, it's just a statement.
Ricky, is it sort of like a prediction of natural consequences?
I think, yeah, if you don't forgive, it's just like, you know, an apple releases from a tree, it will fall. It's not an ought, it's not a something that's punishable, it just, that's the way it is. It's a description rather than where's another one that if you read through the New Testament and you read some of the things that are written there in that sense, I wish I could think of the one that really was an eye-opener for me, and it may come to me. It was, you should love your neighbor, you know, you should love your neighbor as yourself, sort of thing. As Vern was saying today, like, the Ten Commandments are not law. I hope you were there this morning, because I don't want to go through a whole explanation of how he got to that conclusion. I know sometimes I've talked to my kids and said, hey, those are 10 suggestions of, you know, put those into effect and the world will work. It's like God says, hey, this is the way the world will work. It's not a law and punishment kind of thing. It's, hey, if you break these, if you go against these, the system caves in and we start moving into ill, bad, chaos sort of situation. If you start stealing and killing and coveting and adultering and having other gods before me, then there's chaos. It's not because, aha, you've broken that rule, I'll slap your hand here. It's you've broken that, and the result is this is what happens. It's if we can put these, I don't want to come down hard on the suggestion idea, because I do believe that it's kind of like this is the prescription for making the world work together. And when we violate those, we get into trouble. Not because God spanks us or zaps us. It's because that's an is. It's a description of what happens. And in the same way, we hear when it says, if you don't forgive your brother, then you won't be forgiven. Because your system will not allow you to experience that. I mentioned yesterday Tillich's comment that has had so much effect on me, because I think many of you, maybe not, but anyway, for myself, I left the church for a while. And the phrase of Tillich's that you are accepted, all you need to do is accept that you're accepted. And how hard it is to do that. You don't earn your way in, you don't pay your dues. We don't have enough money. We don't have enough gifts. We don't have enough of anything to pay our way. And it is only because God loves you and cares about you that you can get in. That's the only way it is. It's not because you've got the price of admission. The price of admission has already been paid. And all you have to do is accept that. And that's one heck of a big job to do, because, like the lady in that commercial a few years ago, please, Mother, I'd rather do it myself. Getting back to the question of forgiveness, and that comes in too, because it's, again, accepting that, God forgives. And we are certainly not assuming that we are God. But when we do not forgive, we are the ones that pay the price. And we pay it internally or in our own relationships with other people. And we continue to go on until there is some resolution to that. If we believe, as most of us up here at Holden do, that we ought not to judge others, and then we find ourselves judging others, then we experience guilt. And, gee, I shouldn't do that, but I'm doing that. Well, I shouldn't. Yesterday I talked about being angry with God. And, in my rules, the way I was brought up, you should not be angry with God. God knows everything. He does everything right. And if it's, then you must be wrong. But I was furious. And so I had to deal a lot with the guilt of being angry with God. And one of the ways that I did it was to shut myself off from him and build a barrier around him, go through form. I did a certain amount of the form sort of thing, but not in any sense of a relationship. Have you ever been in a situation where you were really angry or really unforgiving of somebody, but you had to meet them in a social context, and you shake the hand as you go through the receiving line, or you say hello at the grocery store or whatever it is, but there is no relationship there. It is merely a matter of form. And that's the sort of thing that I know I experienced when I was feeling guilty about being angry with God. And then I kind of blocked off what I was even feeling. And I went through the form. I went to church, not regularly, but I did go to church. But I did it as a matter of form, not because I wanted some communication. In the sense that we're talking about these barriers, there are lots of ways we justify not forgiving. One of the ways we do that is if I forgive her, she'll do it to me again. And that becomes a justification. We don't even look at that very closely, because that allows us to hold the stance of unforgiveness. there's nothing that says if you forgive that you have to put yourself at the same risk again. If somebody has stolen money from you, you do not, you may forgive them for that situation, but that does not mean that you have to allow them to take your money and have the opportunity to steal it from you again. But you can forgive the incident in the sense of by your not forgiving isn't going to change it. By your not forgiving, you are essentially saying, you know, hey God, you've already forgiven him, but I'm not going to. By your not forgiving, you are hurting yourself. And so by forgiving, saying, okay, we'll let that one go and we'll move on. I mean, I can forgive, but I don't have to forget the incident and not put myself at risk. But you can move on in caring for that person, caring for their well-being, caring for who they are, and not get yourself into the bind of the unforgiving and the guilt that goes with not being able to forgive or not allowing yourself to forgive. There is a sense when we deal with our kids, we often say, if I forgive them, then they'll really go bad. And the reality, as psychologists will tell you, and who've done some study about that, is that that's just not true. That your judgment is often what keeps them from making changes for themselves. That your unacceptance helps them to feel unacceptable. And so that again is a barrier that's not, excuse me, that's not valid. But it keeps you from allowing the forgiveness of God to come into yourself.
How would you react if you saw some criminal do something bad? Would you forgive him or turn him over to the law?
One does not mean you can't do the other.
I beg your pardon?
One, I mean, by turning him over to the law doesn't mean that you can't forgive him, too.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. If somebody is doing something in violation of the law, part of helping that person to make a change is to make sure that that's taken care of. But that doesn't mean you have to hate him. See, so often unforgiveness comes to be hate. And if you fill your life with that, you can get a stance of just hostility toward everybody. I keep thinking of that. The person blocking off God's love coming to this one here. And that is a stance of hatred. And that's one heck of a way to go through life. Or it might be appropriate. So I'm not being profane here. I think that's one hell of a way to go through life. Because you're living in a constant hell if you're in that state of hostility and hatred. There are some techniques that we have rediscovered within the last 10 to 15 years that help us to experience some expression of forgiveness, and they come out of meditative experiences, and I'm going to invite you to try something with me. So if you'll sit up comfortably so your back is straight. So we talked the other day, meditation is something that we have just kind of had reintroduced to us from the East. The quieting down, the King's X time. And we can use that time to give ourselves some information, some experiences that we don't have to have in reality, but we can have them in our minds that can be practically as effective. And this whole experience of meditation has been reclaimed, because if you go back far enough in the Christian church prior to 300 and 400 BC, 400 AD, that was part of the Christian tradition. And somehow or another, maybe it wasn't efficient. I don't know what it was. Or it took more time than people were willing to take, or what. But we lost it in terms of dealing only then with verbal prayers or liturgical prayers. So it's been exciting to have this come back to us, have it available to us again from Eastern religions. People have said, hey, we have had this and we've lost it, and let's reclaim it. Let's reclaim the positives. Sometimes it, even though, you know, sometimes you can say, you know, this person will do such and such and find that the response is very positive, you know, that's kind of a nice conclusion. And sometimes, as you mentioned, even feeling sorry for them, seeing how they lock themselves into a pattern of, if you've got a cranky neighbor or something like that, you're aware of how that person just locks themselves into a pattern of making enemies. They become the person that everybody on the block doesn't like, sort of thing. How they lock themselves in, and to be able to feel some compassion for how lonely they must be. It's really hard to be angry with them, even if they've kept your rake and your hoe and all this sort of stuff for ages.
But you think we're living in a system now for every 4 years with brother against brother. And do you think that's good for the country? See what I mean?
Oh yeah, I do see what you mean.
Look up.
Well, not it's every 4 years, it's every 3 years.
Well,
because you got a whole year long of doing
you
that.
Get the picture.
Sure do. Mm-hmm. How can we forgive, you know, somebody whose views are so, you know, look so poisonous to us?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have the whole solution. I know from my I don't have any of it, but I've got one little piece. I've got some good friends from college, and we get together whenever Dale and I go back to the Midwest. And one fellow, there are two other couples, and both couples graduated with me from college. One husband is now the first vice president of one of the biggest banks in Chicago, and having been raised in that, he was the 15th child in a family in Iowa, and he was dirt poor, and he has just really hard-scrabbled himself all the way to, well, he's given lectures to the Joint Chiefs of Staff. You know, he is one sharp cookie. The other husband is a school teacher. He's taught overseas. He's been in the mission field and so forth. Their political views are about this far apart. I mean, I can't get any farther apart. That's as far apart as I am. And the Dale's and mine are about here. But when we get together, we have known each other for so long that I don't agree with the conclusions Gail, this is the banker, has come to. But I know in his mind, it adds up, and he wants the best for our country. He is, from his perspective, this is the best way. I trust his intentions. I don't like his conclusions. And so in that sense, I have learned to continue to love him and care for him. You know, I don't like, you know, the way he adds things up. He must be using base 50, and I'm still using base 1. And the same way. And actually, the six of us can really have a good time. We can even talk politics without hating one another, because we trust each other's intentions, even though not the conclusion. And I don't know if that's any answer, but I know that that has helped us to remain close friends.
Did he accept the country acceptance? Did he already accept it?
Yeah, there's a lot of it. Well, you know, we've known each other since we were 16 or 17 years old. We know all the foibles. We know, you know, all the tricks we played. We don't pretend with one another. And in that sense, you know, at some point, the way we added things up obviously diverged. But
yeah, a lot harder when they're total strangers.
Yeah, it is harder because you don't know if you can trust their intentions. That's right. That is available to you, you know, all the time. It's one of those neat, packable sort of things you can do at any time on a bus, in the car, not when you're driving. Please, not when you're driving. But it's the kind of thing that can help put things into perspective. And I think when we get so into judgmentalism, we kind of have a hard time putting things into an overall perspective. And that, for me, is an exercise that does do that for me. Any other comments? I guess we're really, you know, in terms of, did you have a comment?
Well, I was just thinking, I wish there was some way that, you know, everything you said was kind of a journey that we took from this place. But if the person couldn't or wouldn't do what you would like them to do to make forgiveness easier, you know, I can go all the way through and know that there's forgiveness. But I wish there was some way to deal with the pain of knowing that that person either doesn't care enough, or if there's no reconciliation, no closure, because even though you forgive, there's still that pain is a continual thing that will never heal. As far as I can see in my mind, in myself, in my being, I don't see how I can ever fully heal, even though I forgive it. And I can visualize things that Jesus would say to me, and I can look at the person and say, that's true, and I see it, I know it. Still the pain.
Mm-hmm.
I wish there was some way that a person could deal with that.
And part of it is, how long do you want to hold on to the pain?
Well, I don't, but how do you let loose of it?
Well, one of the ways to let loose of it is to, you know, to try to put this in a you know, much larger context. The pain is there for you with that one person, mm-hmm. and it's also also you're saying that the only way that I can bring closure to it is kind of in this way. And if they are unwilling to do that, to be able to turn that over to God, and that's very difficult. As I said the other day, you know, I'll turn it over one day, and the next day I pull it back. Yeah. So it's I'm learning to let him have a little bit longer each time.
Okay, all right, that makes sense.
Yeah.
To let him have it a little longer each time might be the thing.
And but part of it is to believe that God can take the situation and bring some good out of it,
mm-hmm.
even though I can't see where it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
I go back to Genesis 50, you know, 4 and 5 times a week, and maybe more, but not really aware of it. Genesis 50, which is the story of Joseph. And, you know, in Bethel series, we learned that the concept that came out of that is God can use evil for good. God doesn't make the evil, but given the evil, he can use that and turn it into a good. And I keep thinking, that brat Joseph, you know, I read through that, and I remember when I was a kid reading about that brat. You know, how would you like to have this little pipsqueaky brother of yours, you know, coming around in all his new clothes and saying he's father's favorite, and someday when, you know, you guys are all going to bow down to me, and all these neat dreams about it. What? And yet, if he, you know, a couple of things. When the fact that he was sent off into Egypt, he was in a place where he could have a real effect eventually on that whole family, and of course on the whole nation. Without his being there to interpret those dreams, the brothers and their families would never have been saved. All of Egypt would have been in famine. And also, I just thought, as we'd learn more and more about self-esteem, that if he hadn't had so much self-esteem, hadn't thought so well of himself because his father had coddled and loved him and spoiled him, he probably couldn't have survived in that the prison situation, and nor had the confidence to say, you know, yes, I will do this and interpret. And I've always thought of it in terms of, if he hadn't been there, that we wouldn't have had there wouldn't have been a way to avoid the famine. But it just recently I thought, you know, if he hadn't been such a spoiled brat, not necessarily spoiled, but loved, and certainly had a very high sense of his self-esteem, he wouldn't have been in a position to do that. And so, as I said, to go back to that chapter and that whole concept that God can use evil for good, I don't know how it's going to come out, but I do believe that God can use this as a positive if I will let him. If I keep pulling it back, I keep making it negative, and I'm making it negative for me. And when I give you these pronouncements, I want you to know that I don't do this all the time. Sometimes I give it to him, and not a whole day later I pull it back. 5 minutes I pull it back. You know, not quite, I start worrying again. And but increasingly I have been able to let him take it for a longer period of time.
Another thing that causes me is take place in the hand-to-hand combat in the war. How can a person be forgiven? It's his life and my life.
But after the wound, after there's being left, you know, is there any sense in which you could? I don't know. It would be difficult.
If we went the whole United States peace loving and the invaders come in here and took us. You follow what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I think that people have always had to do that in war. But there's always a sense in which they have to say, right now, you are not John, you know, like the Civil War. You are not John Jones who was raised on the farm down this road. You are fighting for what you believe is right, and I have to, you know, I forgive you even though I'm dying. You know, Father, forgive them, they know not what they do.
You're fighting for right.
Yeah. And to be able to forgive them for what has happened to you. Again, it's in the sense of having that whole context that God can use this to good advantage if we will not get in his way. That, and also to believe that if I believe that God will take care of me, then I believe God will take care of me in all dimensions, not just here. That if I should be killed, if when I die, I still believe God will take care of me. And so that may be another dimension, but that's, there is a, I talked to a couple of people. When our daughter was born, I was, you know, after I said, are you sure it's a girl? Then I had major problems, and I was in the hospital for a month, and I was really critical over a week. Really very close to death. They were not sure that I was going to live. The doctor said afterwards that I seemed to be so calm, and that was what sustained me. And I said, going through that, I really had a sense that God would take care of me no matter what, no matter alive or dead in this world, that he would take care of me. It was a very peaceful time. I wasn't anxious, and I'm not sure how that came to me, if that was that was just the gift that I was given at that time, and I'm not trying to be super pious or anything like that, because there are lots of times when, you know, I've had some real fears about dying and discovered a lump in my breast at one time and really, really had to deal with the fact that, you know, if this was malignant, I wasn't going to be alive 3 months from now because it was, you know, very large and it was not malignant. But I was frightened at that time. So I'm not trying to say I always have that. But there is a sense in which I have gotten a hold of that, and I know that that's possible. And again, it's that larger context, being able to look at it, and I think bringing Christ into that peaceful scene gives you a sense of seeing it in a larger context, and can be easier to forgive and to love. It's always in the nitty-gritty that it's hard, and the generalities it's easy. But to be able to move the nitty-gritty to the larger scene and see it in perspective.